apparently there's something about an anatomically correct rubber suit that puts fire in a girl's lips. Who knew? I mean, where was this information when I was in high school? Batman and Robin next on Random Rewatch.
My name is Freeze. Learn it well. Voice the chilling sound of your doom. This is the way the world could end.
Please, show some mercy.
With ice. With a kiss.
With venom. I probably should have mentioned this. I'm poison. Poison Ivy.
And the only man who can stop them.
I Freeze. I'm Batman.
Can't do it alone.
So it's 1995. Batman Forever has just made $336 million. And Warner Brothers immediately rehires Joel Schumacher and Akiva Goldsman to direct and write a sequel to Batman Forever. Val Kilmer decides he doesn't want to do the movie. Apparently he didn't get along with Schumacher in doing Batman Forever. He didn't like the movie. He didn't enjoy the experience. And so they have to find themselves a new Batman. And they pull an up-and-comer by the name of George Clooney. Now, I'm sure you've heard of George Clooney, but in 1995, 1996, maybe you had, maybe you hadn't. He'd been on TV a little bit. His first kind of role was in a show called ER, not that one. This was a sitcom that aired for one season in 1984. He came in halfway through the season as a minor character. He would do periodic appearances. In 1985, he caught a recurring role in The Facts of Life, where he played George, the handyman. He would play in, a couple years later, he would get a recurring role in Roseanne, where he played a character called Booker, who was Roseanne's boss. And he would do a couple of things. And then in 1994, he got cast in ER. Yes, that one, where he kind of comes into the public view as Dr. Doug Ross. He hadn't done a lot of movies at that point, but From Dusk Till Dawn came out in 1996 and was pretty widely acclaimed, and George was really singled out for a great performance. And so the deal was done. He's our new Batman. The other weird thing that happens in this movie is the casting of Arnold Schwarzenegger, who, even though he's not playing Batman, is actually given top billing in this movie. This is an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, if you look at all the posters and everything, and all the marketing of the film. He is given top billing over the actual actor who's playing Batman. Schwarzenegger was kind of going through a weak stretch. I mean, he had done Terminator 2 in 91, but then after that, he had Last Action Hero, True Lies, which was a good film. But then Junior, Eraser, Jingle All the Way, these are not his greatest films, and this is not the high point of his filmography. And I think somewhere in the middle there, he had also had some heart surgery. And so the really weird part about this is he spends the entire time basically in a suit. I mean, you hire Arnold Schwarzenegger to do a movie because he's massive, and he's got all these muscles, and he's physically imposing, and he doesn't get to do any of that in this film. This film is basically him just throwing one-liners out.
The Iceman cometh. I'm afraid that my condition has left me cold to your pleas of mercy. What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age! Can you feel it coming? The icy cold of space. After you're frozen, your icy tomb will plummet back to Gotham. Please, well, stay cool, bird boy.
It's really weird casting. You could have gotten almost anyone else. And as we'll talk about, there's a couple other people who were in consideration for this, and I think a lot of them would have been better. So anyway, so Joel Schumacher pitched this movie to Warner Brothers, and he wanted to do kind of an adaptation of Batman Year One. He wanted to kind of go darker. He wanted to make it a smaller story than Batman Forever. He wanted to kind of bring it down and do a very character-driven thing. And Warner Brothers is like, yeah, that's cool. But these boys over here at Mattel, they're going to tell you about your movie. Warner Brothers wanted the film to be what they called more toyetic, which I did not even know toyetic was a word, but apparently it is a word. And toyetic means that it is friendlier for creating toys around it. And that is exactly what this film was. It was basically a 125-minute toy commercial. Some of the props were designed by the toy manufacturers. Freeze's ice gun was designed by a toy manufacturer. Some of the bat equipment, the bat suits, parts of the costumes were all designed by toy manufacturers so that they could manufacture toys to sell on the back of this film. And so you wind up in a movie with, you know, George Clooney, who, you know, would win an Academy Award, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Chris O'Donnell, who's had his success, Alicia Silverstone coming off Clueless, Uma Thurman coming off Pulp Fiction. Like, this should be a great film, and it's not. It's awful. It is, I would say, inarguably, the worst Batman film ever, and that includes 1966's Batman movie. And I think it's important to include that one because I'm pretty sure this is what they were going for, was this camp feeling that you got when watching the 1966 Batman show. And I think the problem with it is that they didn't understand it. They didn't understand where the comedy in that show came from, where the camp in that show came from, and that you needed someone like Adam West, who was playing it pretty much straight. In fact, a lot of the characters are playing it pretty much straight. And in this film, everybody's just trying to make a joke. Everybody's just trying to throw out a one-liner. So we talked about some casting. You know, for Victor Freeze, according to some reports, Schumacher denies it, but according to a lot of reports, the front runner was Patrick Stewart. I just can't even imagine how different this film would be with Patrick Stewart over Arnold Schwarzenegger. I can't see Patrick Stewart throwing out, you know, lines unironically, like "the Iceman cometh" and all these other things. I just don't understand why they would go with what they went with. Other than the fact that, you know, Schwarzenegger was a really big star and they probably figured that he would draw a lot of people in. Ed Harris was another consideration for Victor Freeze. Anthony Hopkins, can you imagine Anthony Hopkins as Victor Freeze in this movie? You're talking a totally different movie, and I don't necessarily think it's a bad movie. So for Poison Ivy, they kind of looked at, they looked at Sharon Stone, they looked at Julia Roberts, they looked at Demi Moore. Can't say that I think any of them would be better than Uma Thurman, but they may have made different choices. I can't see Sharon Stone hamming it up and doing the really bad Mae West impersonation that Uma Thurman does throughout this movie. As far as, you know, our young heroes, Chris O'Donnell obviously is a holdover from the last film. He wasn't going anywhere. And apparently Alicia Silverstone was always the choice to play Barbara. You know, Barbara, Alfred Pennyworth's British niece, who sounds like she grew up in Santa Barbara. Apparently, Alicia Silverstone did not have a great time doing this movie. Apparently, they gave her a lot of trouble over her weight, which is kind of bizarre. She's not overweight at all, but apparently they had her, or she lost 10 pounds prior to filming this, And then the costume was so tight that if she even put on a little bit of weight, the costume wouldn't fit her properly or couldn't be fastened. And so apparently they were on her a lot about watching her weight, and she's been pretty vocal about that afterwards. The costumes themselves are just, yeah, they're just bizarre. I'm just going to come out and say it. Bat nipples. Why? Why do these costumes have nipples on them? I don't understand that at all. And if you look at the suit-up montages where they're getting into the suits, there's all these, like, super tight shots on crotches and butts and chests and... Well, I don't even know what Joel Schumacher's doing here in this. It's... What's the point he's trying to make? I mean, this is a movie you're taking your kids to, right? There were problems with Victor Frieza's costumes. They took so long for him to get in and out of that they were limited to how much filming they could do with him every day because of the way his contract was written. He could only work 12 hours a day, and that included all of his time. And Schwarzenegger, by the way, made $25 million for this film. I don't know where that money went. Chris O'Donnell had a hard time because of the mask that was literally glued to his face every day. And obviously George Clooney had a problem because he couldn't turn his head. It was just weird, the whole thing. I guess my biggest problem with this movie is I guess I just don't buy the entire premise of it. So you have Victor Freeze, who has this disease who makes it so that he has to be refrigerated all the time, and apparently only diamonds can do that. And he wants to freeze the entire world. And then you have Poison Ivy, who fell into some plants and was infused with this venom that made her a plant lady, I guess. And why would she team up with Victor Freeze, the guy who wants to freeze the whole world? I mean, freezing the whole world probably is very detrimental to most of the plants. So I don't understand what these two would have in common or why they would want to work together. Probably the most egregious thing in this entire film. I shouldn't say that because there's a lot of egregious things in this film. But one of the bad things about this film is their treatment of Bane, who you may not even realize that was Bane in this movie. There's just some strong man who grunts a lot and throws things around. And Bane is, you know, Bane from the comics is, he's almost Batman's equal. He's incredibly intelligent. He's an incredible tactician. They've reduced him to just being like this grunting strong man who can't even put words together. It just doesn't make any sense. I just don't understand why they would do that. Now, you could say what you want about Tom Hardy's characterization of Bane in The Dark Knight Rises, whether between his accent, you know, and the things that he does and the things that he says, but at least he comes across as something that rings true to the origins of the character, you know, being raised alone in a prison and having to develop his own strength and his own skills. They don't really get into the mask and him inhaling the venom and which enhances his strength, but he's clearly an intelligent person. He is clearly a great strategic thinker. Like, he knows he's dying, so he puts all of Batman's knowledge on a CD-ROM or something, and so she can figure it out, and he made her a costume. He's just like, Alfred's just making those decisions right now. And then she just shows up, and Batman and Robin are just like, oh, okay, well, cool. I guess we're found out. I mean, it's just a whole weird setup. And are we supposed to, like, what are we supposed to think about Robin, you know, and Batgirl? Like, is there supposed to be something going on between them? Is there supposed to be some kind of chemistry? But yet, they end the movie, they're saying they're partners and family. They're talking about family, but yet they seem to be trying to flirt with each other a little bit. I mean, I don't know. The whole thing just seems kind of weird. You know, Schumacher has been definitely wanted to talk about it. Like, if you look at his interviews from the time and the commentaries, he's definitely wanted to talk about that this is just meant to be goofy. Apparently, he would stand on a stepladder and yell, "Remember, it's a cartoon," you know, to kind of encourage the actors to just kind of go over the top and go crazy with it. And that was really kind of his point of view, was that it was just supposed to be dumb and stupid and just, I guess, he thought a lot of fun. You know, the only one who's really been pretty straight up about it from jump was Clooney. He's never made any bones about the fact that he doesn't think the movie's good. He doesn't think he's good in the movie. He doesn't necessarily think he was the right person for the movie that Joel Schumacher made. You know, Alicia Silverstone has definitely had her comments about making of the movie. So let's talk about, like, how this movie wound up and how this did in the world, you know? Had $160 million budget, according to some reports. It was somewhere between $140, $160 million. Took in $238 million. It was the worst performing of the Batman movies up until that point. Especially after, you know, Batman Forever, which did over 300. I think it did like $320 million, something along those lines. It was critically not very well reviewed. It's holding an 11% on Rotten Tomatoes. Our man Roger Ebert gave it two thumbs down. He gave it a thumbs down review. He gave it two stars. He said it was beautiful to look at, but that it basically the story wasn't going anywhere. It didn't have any cohesion. It didn't have any focus, which was something that Chris O'Donnell kind of said about it as well, was that he thought Batman Forever, you know, had a cohesion to it, had a story. It was focused on what it was trying to be, and he never understood what this movie was trying to be. You know, I personally think Chris O'Donnell's really the only one of the major characters in this film, maybe the only character in this film. He's the only one who kind of gets it and is kind of trying to put something together. You know, I think that Clooney just kind of seems confused through the whole thing. Schwarzenegger is just throwing one-liners one after the other. If you really watch him and you watch his character, he doesn't do anything. Like, he really accomplishes nothing in this. He basically yells at his henchmen, you know, "Kill the heroes!" And then he runs away constantly. Like, you're putting Arnold Schwarzenegger in your movie and then you're having him constantly run away and rely on his henchmen? Like, I don't even understand that. And he's just this string of really bad one-liners. Seems to be really all he's doing. So anyway, that's really all I want to say about this thing. I mean, there's really nothing much to say. I could go on and on about how terrible it is, how bad it is, you know, what I think the awful parts of it are, how none of it makes sense. I mean, they kill Poison Ivy by throwing her into the plant that she came in. You know, I'm going to stop now. You know, if you really like 66 Batman and you really want to see something that's trying to do that, knock your socks off. You know, if you're a completist and you want to see the whole Burton-inspired Batman quadrilogy, go for it. You know, this movie's out there. I have a hard time recommending this thing to anybody. And, yeah, it's really, really not my cup of tea. I was hoping, you know, I haven't seen this movie in 15, 20 years, and I kept saying, like, why haven't I rewatched this? It took me, like, that first action sequence, and I know exactly why I haven't rewatched. All right, so we're bringing out the random number generator and programming it 1997 to 2020 to 2003, and we are coming out with 2002. All right, year of Catch Me If You Can, The Pianist, Gangs of New York, Internal Affairs, Panic Room, Minority Report. All right, I'll pick something out, and we'll figure out what we're going to do next time. Thank you for listening. Listen to the main show, and I'll catch you next time on The Rewind.